The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. Spot rare wildlife, explore the forest, and have endless adventures together.
And a very good morning to you all. This is Ryan Tubridy with you. It is Wednesday morning, the 21st of June 2023, and it's just gone 9:05. Beautiful morning here in Dublin, Ireland, and we are very happy to have your company. Normally, as you know, we'd have a look at the papers and see what's happening, but our guest this morning is a busy man. He is visiting the island for a short time, I suspect, but he's here, at least in Dublin, on what I think might be his first official visit as Special Envoy to Northern Ireland for Economic Affairs. Former Congressman Joe Kennedy, welcome, and nice to see you in real life once more.
It is always a pleasure, my friend, and great to do this in studio, and great to be back in Ireland.
Yeah,
so, thank you for having me.
We were nearly there for the interview a few times here and there, but we got there, so thanks. And I think you're on the road north again as soon as we're finished here.
I am. We end up do a couple of stops around the border and then up to Belfast later tonight.
So, all right.
They keep me moving, but...
They do. And the last time we met was when we were up with the radio show up in Belfast for the Good Friday Agreement anniversary. And it was the who's who of the peace process, obviously. I mean, not that you were there at the time, but you must have looked around you and thought, God, what a powerful gathering of people for such a small geographical entity with a massive historical story.
It was extraordinary. And it was extraordinary on a number of levels. One, to see the attention of all of these world leaders, past and present, come together to recognize what happened 25 years ago. Mm. But also a reminder as to what can happen when people make a commitment and when people will it to be so. And look, there's the challenges and conflict between Ireland, Northern Ireland, Britain, et cetera, has been going on for a long time, obviously. But to see the affirmative choices that people made to finally choose peace, and then the political leadership that helped galvanize that and mobilize it. And for me, anyway, hearing the stories, individual and personal stories, right? You hear an awful lot from the political leadership about what prime ministers and presidents and Taoiseachs did. But to also hear their own personal pathways and journeys through it and the choices that they had to make through it. It was extraordinary. And it was a nice reminder in a time that has become so divisive and so cynical and people for, understandable reasons, doubting the power of what politics and democracy can do as this extraordinary reminder of what it can be at its best.
You're spending quite a lot of time on, I'm just going to say the island, because you're coming across the border, and you're not long out of your 30s, are you? I mean, you're about 42 years old, so you have the joy of early 40s for the next couple of years.
I wake up and things already start hurting. It's like, I didn't realize I sprained my ankle last night, but everything hurts, yes.
But you're fit, your lacrosse team called you the milkman. Would you like to explain that? So just explain to everybody listening, because you're not a very typical Irish-American in this regard.
It was a nickname given to me by my coach in college. I was one of those, I guess, potentially at that time, rare college students that didn't drink. And so a couple of the senior players, when I got on the team, we ended up at an establishment and they put a big glass of milk on the table for me. And after that, the rest was history. So it was, a prelude where, without knowing it then, they were already making a down payment on an Irish dairy industry. Doing my best to make that commitment early and often.
So not only an economic envoy, but an agricultural.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Too. You have two children.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes.
And how old are they?
And five and seven, Ellie and James. And I'll tell you, Ryan, it was a long weekend back in the U.S. We took them up to Maine, to a beautiful spot in a national park, which I actually had never visited before. Mm. 5.5-hour drive. So we drive back on Monday morning, get in Monday afternoon. I unpack the car and then pack a bag. And they turn around and go, where are you going? And I said, well, I'm going back to Ireland. And both of them burst into tears. because they said, why can't we come with you?
Is that right?
And I was like, well, you know, they had such a wonderful time. They came over when we were up in Belfast for those 2 weeks. And they had such a wonderful time where it wasn't daddy's leaving. It was, hey, you don't get to go there without us.
Yeah, we missed the stuff, not the man.
Exactly, the stuff
that went with it and the joy of it. But it's funny because when George Mitchell was here as an appointee of President Clinton, I remember at the end of the peace process, is a quote where he was turning around to all these august, this august body or form, and was saying, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but I hate to leave you, but I can't wait to leave you. Because he had a baby boy himself.
Yes, he did.
He wasn't a spring chicken.
Yes, he did.
You, as you know, at that time, and he wanted to go home.
I mean, listen, it was an extraordinary several days up at Queen's for that celebration.
Sure.
Senator Mitchell's speech was one of certainly the highlights then, but one of the more remarkable ones I've heard.
Very emotional by all of them.
Very emotional.
What was he saying that was striking such a chord?
I think a number of things. One, you know, he was open about this, but he's been ill for a while.
That's right.
The fact that, as he said, which is the only thing I would disagree with him on, which, and I think he says it tongue in cheek, but he said, you know, 700 days of failure and one day of success, right? It was, that's not what he did. It was 700 days of working. And as somebody said about him, he listened to all sides to an agreement, right? He just, he was relentless and tireless in his ability to be patient and to hear and to recognize and to give people that space and that agency to come together. But again, as I was kind of alluding to earlier, when we talk about what political leaders did to make this also happen, and not to say that they deserve all the credit, that's obviously not true, but Senator Mitchell made this commitment while he had a newborn baby back in the U.S.
Yeah,
right?
It's quite
and so
something.
There's a personal side to every one of these dynamics. We had a nice reception last night with at the ambassador's residence, and former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern was here. And I mentioned then in my remarks that one of the more powerful moments that I recall from a number of those recognitions as well, which you will know and many of your listeners will, but doesn't get as, you know, is recognized as others, is that part of that peace process culminated over the same time of the funeral of his mother.
That's right.
And the fact that he left those negotiations, came down, literally buried his mom and then turned back around and went home.
Yeah, that was a remarkable moment. Yeah.
And for folks to recognize the pain that he was in and that this still mattered. Again, you see the commitment that folks make that is oftentimes unrecognized and unsaid.
You're describing what's called public service and at its best, in fairness. There is public service at its worst, and we've seen that. And we could talk about that all day long.
yes, we could.
In your country and mine.
Yes, we could.
It might be a far more interesting interview. But let's talk about the good stuff, because public service is... Yeah, there's so much cynicism around politics. And so we could be here praising or burying public service, but it's clearly in your DNA. It's in your bones. But you didn't have to get involved. I mean, you became a congressman. You could have become a lawyer. You could have gone into...
I did that too.
Yeah, well, sorry. No, I meant you could have pursued... Sorry. You could have headed down that road. I know you had became a lawyer, but you could have gone down into the court system and become practicing full time, if you like. So at what point do you decide, I'm going to Congress. You know, I'm going to serve the public good, if you like. I mean, given that you're... Obviously, your grandfather is Bobby Kennedy, and your father was a former congressman, of course, and your granduncle was John F. Kennedy. And I don't need to get into that. What age were you when you thought, "Yeah, that's for me"?
You know, Ryan, there wasn't kind of a eureka moment to it. Obviously, there was a process that I went through. But I think the biggest part to it, you know, when you see. Folks that end up continuing a career in the military because their members of their family didn't, or continuing a career in, you know, a certain business or whatever else. And not to say politics is a family
but
business.
But it could be a butcher. It could be a carpenter or electrician.
Yes. The reason why I bring that up is just to say it wasn't so foreign to me, right? The idea for some of like, oh my God, how would you ever think to go run for office? How would you do that? Why would anybody think to do that? It's something that is so distant from their own personal experience. It obviously wasn't for me. My dad was in this, had the job for 12 years while I was growing up. Mm. And his friends, people he brought over the house, were other members of Congress. And so when I was growing up as a kid, he had other congressmen over, senators over, and I didn't know them as congressman or senator. I knew them as like the guy that I wanted on the football team out back, or I didn't, because they couldn't catch or they couldn't throw a spiral, right? I didn't care. I was 8, 9, 10, and the fact that they were elected to somewhere was the furthest thing from my mind. But you just grew up around these conversations about elected office. You grew up about hearing stories about what life was like, not just the work, but what life was like in it. And so it wasn't something that was nearly as foreign to me as it might be for others. And just as we were alluding to, elected office is an incredibly challenging position. It is relentless in terms of what it will take from you and what it asks of you. I think particularly if you're doing that job right and well. But the potential then to also make an impact for people that I think otherwise a system will not see, will not hear. Mm. I love my country. I love our system. Our system is not perfect. Our country is not perfect, right? The beauty of the commitment of what I think America means to me is a commitment to be better, right? The fact that you are always striving to be that more perfect place. And I always thought it was striking to have more in that sentence, to know that you're not ever wholly going to get there, but that the journey is part of that pursuit, that it is worth the effort, and that is worth part of democracy is the messy part. It is the toil. It is the struggle. But it's recognizing that there's faults and failures in that system, and that part of your job as being a piece of it is to try to make it more reflective and representative and make more people seen and heard in it. If you have that opportunity, and if you believe in that, then to be able to play a small part in it obviously was a tremendous honor.
What did you think on election night when Donald Trump got elected? What was going through your mind?
it was a tough night for me, and I think for a lot of folks. I remember that night well. I was watching the returns with my wife. I'd been actually up campaigning in New Hampshire earlier that day for Secretary Clinton. I remember getting exit polls that afternoon. And the exit polls I'd gotten from the campaign and whatnot were still indicated that Secretary Clinton was going to pull out a narrow victory. And by the way, I'd spoken to Republicans as well who were expecting that Secretary Clinton was going to win. And then as the returns started coming in, I started seeing those numbers and saw that there's a 3 or 4 point swing in every one of these kind of battleground states. And I went, oh my goodness, you know, those numbers were off, right? Mm-hmm. They're off by 3 or 4 points across the board. And my wife actually stayed up later because I said, hey, this is like, it's over. It's not officially over, but it's over. And, it was a wake-up call, I think, for me. The way I think about presidential elections is presidential campaigns are about answering a question. And part of the campaign is guessing the question that the public is going to be asking in November, because those campaigns have to start 18 months or so before. And the question that I asked was, at a time of economic and political uncertainty, do you want the most experienced hand on the wheel to help guide us through it? And if that's the case, Secretary Clinton was a very clear answer. If the question you're asking, though, is our system is broken and we need a change, and if we have a choice of a change, do you want somebody that's had a seat at the table of power for the past 30-plus years, or somebody that, at least through rhetoric, says, I have a seat at the table of power and I can tell you why it's broken and that they're taking advantage of you? And it's not to say more people chose the second, because more people actually chose the first, but enough people in enough places in the United States.
That's our system. You've got the Electoral College system, yeah. And it works the other way too, of course.
But it is to say that it was a wake up for me to say, hey, you know, at least for parts of a Democratic Party, there are parts of our system, of our country, of our people that we haven't done as good a job listening to, hearing, seeing, and channeling, right? We do an awfully good job prescribing and diagnosing. We don't do nearly as good a job treating, right? And there's a difference between me telling somebody what's wrong with you, telling a community what they need to do better, saying, hey, yes, you're, you know, a post-industrial manufacturing facility or town or community, you need to really invest in in talent. You need to invest in human capital. You need to do X, Y, and Z. I can diagnose that problem. Helping a community heal, treat, build is an entirely different set of skills. It's a different process. And we've done, I think a Democratic Party has done a very, we've got plenty of very smart people that can run a regression analysis and tell you what's wrong.
Yes.
We haven't done as good a job actually listening to people and building up what's right.
Yeah, President Biden, who had a very successful visit to Ireland
yes,
recently,
he did.
As you know, you were there. He appointed you.
Yeah.
Your uncle's running against him for the nominee to be the Democratic nominee mm-hmm. for the next election. How does that play for you? Is it tricky? Is it your uncle's anti-vaccination? He has a very particular brand in that regard, but he's polling quite healthily at around 20% this week. So, how are you feeling about that?
So, look, I love my uncle. You know, it's one thing that a value that I know my family shares is that through thick or thin, and we've had, you know, as a family, great successes and great challenges. But the one thing you can count on is family, and that family will always be there for you no matter what. And it's something and a value that we hold very dearly, and it's one that I seek and hope to always uphold as well. So, you know, I love my uncle dearly, and he's family. I also have this position because I was appointed by President Biden,
yes.
And I have deep personal and professional affection for him as well. It's an awkward circumstance.
When
a family member
it's a bit tricky.
runs
yeah.
against your boss, right?
It's a blood and water.
It's a tough dynamic.
But I suspect you will vote for President Biden over.
I've indicated to everybody and my uncle as well that I recognize that he feels like he has a message that he wants to deliver, and obviously, yeah. you know, he should feel free to do so. That being said, you know, my commitment to the president is to continue to work for this administration. My decision to support the president politically is separate from obviously my decision
your
to have this
your,
position.
Yeah, yes. I understand.
But also, you know, I think Ryan, when you look at what President Biden and this administration has been able to achieve for the American public, for democracies around the world, and for our planet. It is literally without hyperbole one of the most effective and influential now 2.5 year periods in modern American history.
And yet, for a lot of people, mm-hmm. the President Biden getting the White House back was, for the Democrats mm-hmm. at least, was a reset in mm-hmm. international relations, if nothing else. And yet again, you wonder. Gosh, a lot of people suggesting that Donald Trump could be president again. You know, it's not a given.
No,
re-election
certainly not a
isn't a given.
And there's no givens in American politics
True.
These days, right? And that's a big part of that. It's a divided society, without question. And you know, I think on the one hand, tough to swallow because I think you have, for anybody that has had the chance to meet or spend time with President Biden, he's a singularly decent human being, which you might recall, you follow closely. Even Republicans, shortly after Biden was elected, many of his old colleagues in the Senate, all they would say about him when asked about, you know, this new administration, whatever else was, you know, I like Joe Biden personally, but.
But, right? Yeah, yeah.
But so they couldn't say anything bad about the guy because he's a truly decent human being, and he is.
He's a retail politician of the old school, which I quite like in that he wants to go out and slap backs, shake hands, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but in terms of trying to get bipartisan movement on the Hill, that's something we haven't seen for a
it's
few presidents.
Slapping back and shaking hands, but it's also recognizing that... as was explained to me by a senior Republican when I first got elected, it was, if you have run for high office in the United States, you care about something. There's a reason why you're there, because if not, the job just ain't worth it, right? Yeah. The cost personally just is not worth putting your family through unless you believe that there's a greater impact that your service is going to hopefully be able to, a contribution you're going to be able to make. And so, you know, the issues that come before any members of Congress desk, House, Senate, et cetera, there's dozens and dozens of them every day. And there are ones there that we're going to disagree on, but there's ones you're going to agree on. Mm. And part of, at least as it was, as I defined the job, was, look, on issues of seminal importance, we might disagree. And you know, if you're going to try to take healthcare away from people, I'm going to object to that. I'm going to do everything I can to block those efforts to take healthcare away. But if there's work that we can do on trying to increase opportunities for children in foster care, if there's work that we can do on, you know, increasing apprenticeships in post-industrial communities, if there's work we can do on climate, if there's work we can do on, there's millions of other things that we can work on. And President Biden has done, has spent his career finding those areas of opportunity and never writing anybody off.
Let me ask you before we conclude, because I know the road awaits, but when you think of the, your when your great, what, your grand uncle John F. Kennedy came here 60 years to this month.
Yeah.
So there's a big next week, which is really exciting to think about that. And he described, he said, this is not the country of my birth, but it is the land for which I have the greatest affection, which is treacherous behavior, but we'll take it. But you know what I mean. But he came here and he had a ball, obviously, as you know, and he watched footage of it after the event. The
other thing, over and over and over
apparently,
again. Yes, he did.
Much to the chagrin of the family, he said, no, we've seen this. Can we watch something else? Is the Twilight Zone on yet? You know. Now, the second thing, then, when you work your way down, Ted Kennedy was a great friend of Ireland's, as you well know. And then, actually, when you think of Jean Kennedy Smith as well, who is a resident at the embassy now, where Claire Cronin is doing such a great job, is now. And Jean Kennedy Smith played quite a significant role in terms of the Adams visa through Bill Clinton's intervention and what have you. So the connection between this tiny patch of land and that extraordinarily large country that you have, an influential one, is quite something. So when your ancestors left New Ross in Dungannstown in the 1840s because of a catastrophe here, isn't it extraordinary, the echoes of history? And here we are today, here you are today, the president's envoy in Northern Ireland. And on it goes. On it goes,
and
Joe.
On it goes. And Ryan, you know, I that... the Irish history in America is one that is cherished. It's one that is bipartisan, right? Yeah. It does span a political spectrum. It's one that there's great affection for. One of the, as I finished my 2 weeks in April up in Belfast, one of my last visits was actually to a display of one of the original copies of the Declaration of Independence that was being put on by a house at an institution of Ulster Scots, because of the number of Ulster Scotsmen that actually signed that declaration.
Sure.
And so when I think about what this island has meant for the United States, quite candidly, we wouldn't have been an independent country without the contributions of people from this island. The United States of America certainly wouldn't be the society we are today without the contribution of so many Irish families that through extraordinary challenge and deprivation and desperation got on coffin ships and sailed the Atlantic. You know, it is that that empathy, that history, that and that deprivation that I think that recognition of it that brings people together across a lot of divides, because there's that shared history. And I know that those stories that were passed down from my ancestors, and why this heritage means so much to my family, was because, you know, that there but for the grace of God go I, that for circumstances outside your control, that things can change rather quickly. And your base of, you know, the basic necessities that you have in order to protect your own family, to provide for your children, that those can be gone. Mm-hmm. When you know of times in your own family's history, now obviously for us generations ago, but those folks that had to survive through it and so many that didn't.
It gives you a political, an economic and a geographical empathy, I think, in some ways,
certainly,
that if you came from another country, maybe one with a colonial past, you simply wouldn't have.
Certainly. And it's one that obviously resonates broadly today.
Maria was on to say, I'm driving around lovely Kinsale, which is in West Cork, working hard as a public health nurse, listening between calls, and we provide an excellent public service here. I grew up hearing about John F. Kennedy's visit to Ireland the year my mother was pregnant with the twins. And yes, I'm one of those twins, as are you, by the way,
that's
Joe,
right,
aren't you? Yes. I love how the Kennedys love Ireland and never forgot their roots. What a beautiful speaker Joe is and conscious persona he presents. So warm regards from Kinsale in Cork this morning. Dot Tuberty, who was a relation of mine, was great friends of your grandmother, Ethel. How is Ethel?
She's great. You 95.
Know, she's doing all right.
She's more than all right. She has still got her fastball.
Has she? And as a matriarch, is she still politically tuned in and advising and on top of things?
She will always be tuned in and advising no matter what.
I bet.
So, look, she's one of my favorite people on this planet and an extraordinary person, human being, and she's wonderful. Thank you for asking about her. She had extraordinary affection for Dot,
and that was reciprocated, as you well know. And Dot always spoke very highly of that young man, young Joe, as she'd call you. And that young man is now here. She'd be so proud of you, I have no doubt, in your current role. And I wish you well. You're going up to Belfast now, is that right?
We go up to Newry and then up to Belfast later this evening. We've got a they do keep me busy when I'm here, which is great. And then run around Belfast all day tomorrow, back here tomorrow night, and then speaking to Ireland Funds on Friday, hop on a plane back across the pond, and then I'll be back over here in another couple of weeks.
Okay, so. But your children will be standing at the window like two puppies going, is he home yet?
Yes, and what have you brought me from Ireland?
And what have you brought? Oh, you better get busy. You better get to the shop at some stage.
Exactly
yeah,
right.
Yeah, all
exactly
right. Yeah. Right. Former Congressman and currently Special Envoy to Northern Ireland for Economic Affairs, Joe Kennedy. What a pleasure to see you here today, and thanks for taking the time to come to see us.
Always, my friend. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. It's a little after 9:30.